It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Trey Schaap. A golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4-inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am Trey Schaap. UAMS Ortho Now, now open at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. If you have an orthopedic injury, sports, work, or anything else, go in and see the best in orthopedic care. No appointment needed. Ortho Now, open Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, and Saturday, 8 to noon. Located at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. For more information, call 501-686-8674. Coming up in this edition of From the Shortgrass, I sit down with Daniel Fox. Daniel is the best golfer the Little Rock Trojans have ever had, and his play really backs up that statement. He finished fifth at the NCAA championships and was just inducted into the 2026 Little Rock Athletics Hall of Fame. He came all the way from Perth, Australia for the ceremony. I had a chance to sit down with him, and I'm going to share that chat with you after this. Stay with us.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
If hand or wrist pain is getting in the way of your daily life, it's time to see the specialists at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. Their fellowship-trained hand and wrist surgeons treat everything from arthritis and fractures to nerve injuries and carpal tunnel. And with Arkansas's only hand trauma telemedicine program, advanced care is available around the clock. Call Ortho at 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today and get back to living pain-free. That's 501-686-8674. The doctor will see you now.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am Trey Schaap. Daniel Fox, the first time he ever left Australia was to come to college at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. He had sent letters out to many golf coaches throughout the United States. He knew he wanted to come to the United States for college, and he had a couple of responses. One of them, Wynn Norwood, the head golf coach of the Little Rock Trojans. He offered Daniel Fox a great deal that he couldn't pass up, and so he decided to come be a Trojan. Daniel competed for the Trojans from 1998 to 2001 and captured the 1999 Sunbelt Conference Individual Championship and finished fifth at the NCAA Championships that same year. He also helped Little Rock reach their highest national ranking ever, number 20, during the 2000-2001 season. On the tee, Daniel Fox.
Daniel, thanks for joining me on this edition of From the Shortgrass. Do you remember the first time you picked up a golf club and fell in love with the game?
Wow. It was funny. Like, the first introduction I ever had, my godfather was a member of the course that I joined when I was 12. And I remember caddying for him, and I thought, this is the most boring thing I've ever come across. So that was the introduction to golf, but not as a player. So I think it was, I played some other sports when I was younger, and, you know, tennis and t-ball, baseball, all that. And I think the individual nature of the game, so I was probably about 14, and then things started to develop from there that I fell in love with it.
So were you self-taught, or did you get some instruction?
Initially, I think everyone's self-taught. You just sort of, like I said, I played hand-eye sports, tennis and baseball and stuff. So a lot of that's similar, just different planes. And then because of our system back in Australia, like, you have talent identification programs. So by the time I was sort of 14, 15, I was already on the radar in terms of junior development. So then you start getting coaching and stuff like that, which is just, you know, free, and it's part of the process. And but I think it was just one of those things where you sort of get pushed in the right direction. But you're talking back in the late 80s, early 90s, where there wasn't anything specific. Someone just looked at you and saw you doing something, so you sort of did the opposite to try and fix it up. So it was very sort of mishmash sort of information. But I think I always had the ability to hit the ball and get the club on the ball. And then from there I just sort of refine that to a certain point, and it's nowhere near as technical as it is now, and the guys start off in such a much more secure place. So
I would think, though, growing up in the late 80s, 90s in Australia, Greg Norman.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to golf.
Yeah. He was actually probably the biggest thing in golf at one stage, not just in Australia, but he was even like a main draw card. I remember when I was playing professionally all the way through till 2011, 2012, he would come back and play in the Australian Open, and that was still marquee stuff for us at the time. But yeah, like through that 90s period when he was, you know, unbelievable, he was just heartbreaking that nothing worse than 96. That's still, I think anybody that loves golf, that's just still just the most morbid Monday for us because of the time change when he lost out to Fowler. Oh, that's just brutal. But yeah, he was just, he's an icon of the game for sure in Australia.
Did you try to take anything from him, watching him play the game?
I had his foot drag, but then I ended up breaking all the toes on my shoes, all the soles would come off, so I sort of stopped doing that. I think he played in a way that it was electric to watch, but very difficult to try to emulate. I think he was, you know, we just sort of, then there wasn't a lot of golf to watch on television, you know, like we didn't get this broadcast that we have now, where you can go back and watch it whenever you want. So like we had a specific time frame that you could watch it, and it was only in the summer months for us. We'd have our sort of summer of golf. And, yeah, so we sort of – there wasn't a lot of – unless you watched it live, basically, you never got to see anything. You sort of knew about the game and knew what he was could do. But there wasn't a lot of ability, especially at my age. Like you're talking early 90s, I was probably 17, 18.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't a lot of telecast to watch. There wasn't videos to watch, none of that sort of stuff. The first time I ever got my swing on video, I was like 15. So that was, you know, a long time ago now. So even, you know, trying to find anything like that to sort of learn off was difficult. That's why everybody did it from books and reading stuff back in the day, or photos in magazines. That was about all you had.
When did you know that you wanted to try and play collegiate golf? And when did you get to the States to where you could find a university to go to?
This is an interesting one. So, like I said, our state system, the biggest thing for me when I was younger was trying to represent Western Australia in our senior team. So it was a big deal back then. So there's only six states. So we'd all pair off against each other, send our best eight players. We'd all play head-to-head match play in foursomes and singles each day, and then the winner most points, kind of Ryder Cup
style. That's
pretty
cool, yeah.
But it's state by state, and then whoever accumulates the most points head to head, they win the winner. So for me, that's all I cared about, and I had a falling out with the state body because the first year I got in, and I was wrapped like that. For me, I was like, that's the best it could get for me, and they just didn't play me. Initially, I had always rubbed them up the wrong way. I had a very robust personality, especially on the golf course. Like I had a filthy temper. I was just immature.
Boy.
Well, it was just, you know, like it was just a mentality of playing, as I've later found out, like almost perfect golf. And I would get really upset and I'd break clubs regularly and could still play. But it was just one of those things. I was just really sort of explosive on the course.
I bet that got expensive too, breaking clubs.
Oh, yeah, it's funny. You can find a lot of I didn't have a lot of stuff that matched in like shafts. You had to pick, oh, there's a shaft. Yeah, I'll take that. I'll put that in my 7-iron. I need a new one for my lob wedge. Yep, chuck that in, break that, put that one in instead, you know. So I sort of got through on a budget with all that having to factor in. But yeah, so 97, they didn't pick me in the senior team. They had a Colts team, like a varsity, if you like, because my age group fell into that. And I was like, oh, no, I'm not playing. I said, I should be in the top team. So I would always dabbled in the idea of coming to play collegially, but like America was so far away. I'd never left Australia ever, never had a passport, none of that sort of stuff. So once I basically blew that opportunity to represent my state, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to look at this now. And this is all pre-internet. So we, you know, like photocopied like little resumes and packaged them up and sent them off in envelopes and things like that to prospective coaches.
How many did you send out?
Probably about 25 to 30. We just opened the Ping Collegiate Handbook was our little Bible. And we had a friend, my mum's friend, had gone to university, you know, 20 years prior to that. And he said, look, he just basically drew a line on the globe. He says, you make sure you stay underneath there because it's going to be too cold. If you get above Arkansas and all that, it's going to be too cold. So don't bother. You're not used to, like, we don't get snow where I'm from. So like,
sure.
Even temperatures like this, like it's rare for us. And yeah, so I was like, okay. So I sent them off to all these different schools, having no idea who anyone was. Just like, so not realizing, like, so obviously the Razorbacks is like the big university in Arkansas, but everything back home revolves around our capitals. So Perth, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, all that. So Little Rock, oh, that's the capital. Okay, we'll send one off there, send one off to like Arizona, all these different places. And yeah, so that happened. One fell on Coach Norwood's desk and he sort of liked the look of it, I suppose. And then, funnily enough, you'd know this guy, Jack O'Keefe.
Oh, yeah.
So Jack was playing in Australia around this same time. So this would have been in that summer of Golf Swing. He was playing in my home city and organised a meeting. And so I explained to him, oh, look, I've sort of got this offer from Washington. There was an assistant coach from Australia that somehow knew, you know, like who I was. And I said, oh, I kind of like their offer and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, got back to coach. And then coach, you know, presented a really good offer for us because, like, we didn't have any money and the dollar back then was like 50 cents. So every dollar I spent here was $2 back home sort of thing. So coach came back with an amazing offer and I said, yeah, we'll go to Little Rock. And that's how I ended up here.
Was that the first time you left Australia to come to Little Rock to school?
Yeah, just directly, like, just same
wow.
thing, same travel. Different route. I went up through Singapore, across to LA, LA to Dallas, Dallas to Little Rock. So that was, and I didn't sleep at all. It was like that was a haul, that one. So.
Were you pumped up? Were you excited?
Oh yeah, I had no idea what to expect. And I think just for me, I was like, I'm just gonna not expect anything. I'll just take everything as it comes. You're talking, even though we're similar in terms of language and stuff, the cultures are completely different and things like this. You know, like. You understand, like you said, you come across, like I'd never watched golf on television, really. And you come and you watch the golf on TV here, the PGA Tour, it's like, what's this? And I would just sit there and just watch golf nonstop because, like I said, we just didn't have that access to it. We had our little tournaments in the summer, but nothing like a regular week in, week out watching the golf. So for me, I was just like a sponge trying to take it all in. I said to coach, look, you're going to have to, like the grasses were different. The first time I played, I didn't know where to hit it, and they had like those little 150 posts in the fairway, so I just hit it at that. I get there, first hole at Eagle Hill, that was the first round I played here. They're like, oh, so that's 150, and I was like, okay. So I hit a 7-iron, flew the green, and it was hot because I come from winter
oh, yeah.
to summer, and I'm
yeah,
like,
sure.
I was like, geez, the ball goes a long way here, not realizing it's yards, and I'm playing in meters my whole
oh,
and I'm like,
yeah,
what's yard like? And so that was all this thing. I said,
did you ever adjust?
Oh yeah, eventually. Yeah. Well, you had to, you know. So I was, but it was all math. So I was like, okay, 150. Then I'm going to take off 10%, and then that'll give me meters, and then that's sort of how when I got down to the wedges, I just stuck with yards. But then when I got above that, I had to do all these calculations and stuff. So
when you got here, Daniel, and you found the golf courses that Little Rock Men's Golf is allowed to play, what was your reaction to that?
Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. I mean, I come from a private golf club, but not on the level where private golf clubs are here. So I was just amazed, like water and stuff. Like, we don't have water on the golf courses where I'm from. You know, like it's, you know, we're a desert basically. And then we're the coastline. So courses aren't really on the coast, you know. So I was like, even playing at Eagle Hill, you got a Chenal, there's water everywhere. I was like, oh my God, like I've got to stay out of the water and all. It was just such a different visual for me to try to adjust to. But the courses were beautiful. Like that, obviously, Founders Course now was where we played our tournaments on. Bear Den wasn't there. So all these courses that we got to play. Pleasant Valley was under construction. They'd redone the course, I think, in 98 that year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
CCLR?
Like just, yep, played there. Maumelle played there. So Country Club of Arkansas, we played there. Stone Links, we went out to there. We could easily get out there and play and practice. So there's just such a range of golf courses, which is probably the best thing too. You're not just stuck on one course and you go somewhere and you're not familiar, like different grasses, like playing Zorja, then playing Bermuda grass, putting on Bermuda grass, putting on bent grass. It was just such a opportunity just to learn what everything did because, I mean, we had a little bit of Kaikouya, Bermuda grass and bent. That's all we had. There wasn't all these different varieties. So it was a great opportunity to learn.
You were the best player on the team. What did it mean to you to help the other guys and achieve what you guys achieved? Highest ranking ever for the Little Rock Trojans, got to 20th 1 year. You finished Sunbelt champion, fifth at the NCAA tournament. The notoriety of Little Rock golf with you here just went up exponentially. What does it mean to you that you guys were able to accomplish what you were able to do?
I think we were lucky, like I said, because when I came in, I think we had two juniors and then there was like five freshmen. So we had that opportunity just to grow, you know, organically together. So like I said, I'm trying to learn everything. And I remember our first tournament, we went to Wyoming and I had finished ninth. And they're like, oh, my God, we haven't had a guy finish in the top 10 in ages. You're exempt from qualifying next week. And I went, okay. You know, but I was older. I was already 21. I was turning 22, my freshman, in the fall that year. So for me, and I played high level. Like I said, that interstate golf is like playing college golf and you practice and playing all year to get into that team. So for me, the experience of playing at that sort of level was quite normal for me. I didn't have to really adjust. I was obviously nervous and wanted to perform, but for me it was like, you know, so I guess I had started to get little achievements along the way. And then because when you're playing with someone that's, even like if I'm playing with professionals and you can see this guy can play, like he's on, like I played with Dustin Johnson in the Australian Open one round and I was so nervous, hardly slept the night before. And I'm older than him and I should be like, you know, but you learn so much watching them. And I think just because we're all friends and we're all playing that eventually you realise, okay, well, this guy's having good performances. He's actually not that much better, or that he's not such on such a pedestal where he's not achievable to get there. And I think just that growth between everybody, all of a sudden everybody started expecting a little bit better from themselves and not realising that shooting over par, it's like, that's not going to cut it. We have to be par on a bad day and that sort of stuff. And then when you got four or five guys doing that, all of a sudden you start shooting under par all the time, and then other teams are looking at you going, what are these guys doing? You know, I mean, it just happened to be that I'd play consistently well a lot, but you can't do it alone. Like you need two or three other guys playing well, and that's why we could just go on these runs and perform well. So
yeah, you have five play and you got to count four, so you got to have some guys to pick up the back end. I mean, you can have one guy go out there and yeah, he can shoot a 64, 65, 62, whatever, but if you don't have the guys on the back end that can also get around even par 1, 2, 3 over, you're not going to win, right?
Well, that's it. I mean, someone shooting 4 and 5 over, you need someone else to be 4 or 5 under to cancel that out, and then anything else under is what you're after. But yeah, so but like I said, we were fortunate. I mean, we had plenty of times where our fifth scores, you know, only 1 or 2 over par at the most. You know, so that's just this just builds confidence. It's one of those things when you start doing things well, everything starts to go well. But if on the other side, if things weren't great, all of a sudden, you know, guys are all shooting 75s and 76s and it just kills your ability to compete. So we were lucky. Like we just got to a level where we could just rely on anybody. Like sometimes, like I might only shoot even par of 1 under, but someone else would shoot 68 and you're like, okay, great. So there's half your scores already and you're under par, and then someone else shoots, you know, 1 under even, all of a sudden, okay, we're 5 under par. This is for the round. And then all of a sudden we're leading or only 1 or 2 off, and then all of a sudden, you know, you do it again, and then all of a sudden you're 8 under par. You know, so it's like it was just a real collegiate effort from everybody to play well. But I think I just got to a level where I was just consistently a bit better. Like I had an amazing short game when I was in school, and I didn't bogey a lot. I probably didn't birdie a lot, but I didn't bogey a lot. So I was always just ticking off
consistent
1, 2, 3 under pars. Yeah. I'd get hot, shoot 5 or 6 under par. And then the bad days might only be a couple over, so it wasn't too bad. So that's why I was always in the profit side of it. And then everyone else sort of got to that level too where they were, you know, not having those blow-ups. So,
what does Win Norwood mean to Daniel Fox?
coach is everything. In my mind, I didn't have a lot of options after I had that blow-up with the state body. And, he said, yep, come and play, and I was like, okay. And I knew that I had to behave, for one. Like, you know, it's like you get penalized shots if you're, you know, swearing and breaking clubs. And I'm like, God, I'm like, I can't shoot low enough to account for all the penalties if I'm gonna, you know. I was like, oh, I gotta just be a different person. And you know, but he gave me the opportunity to just play, and I think he could tell that I sort of knew what I was doing. And it didn't stop. Like, I played for 3 years, and then he came back and he helped me again when I turned pro, and I lived at his house. So he's been the reason
along with my family, that I'm here today.
Daniel, when did you know that you wanted to try and turn professional and make golf a career?
Once I'd come to college, I think I realized that actually, even like my first year, I was like, you know, like this coaching thing seems really cool. Because I mean, I think you don't realize, especially in golf, because it's such an individual sport, you don't realize, you know, when you're playing with other team members, it's actually really fulfilling as much as it is having your own individual success. So I think for a little while there, I was like, oh, I wonder if I could be a college coach and do that. And they're like, oh, yeah, you're going to have to get a degree. Because I was like, okay, well, that's probably not going to happen then. So, all right, maybe I'll have to play pro anyway. But I think I just got to the level where I was like, you know, I think I can really compete and play and do this. But it was, until you do it, you never really know. And I probably I still hadn't got all of what I should have got out of myself as a pro. I think I became too, like I said, that perfect mindset in my mind as a kid. I think it never really left. And I think once I decided that I was going to do it professionally, that I think I made it, the boundaries of me being able to play with freedom on the course a bit too narrow. But I think I just got to the stage now where I could go to a course I didn't know that well and shoot in the 60s. And I was like, okay, you can pretty much, if you can do that, you can do that anywhere. It doesn't matter. Like my game stacked up. It wasn't like I was, you know, I was short off the tee and I still am. I'm even worse now than I used to be, obviously. But like mostly, like we had a dozen guys and I was probably 10th in length off the tee, but I could hit the fairways. I could chip, I could wedge game as excellent, you know. So I was never really losing a lot of shots from poor play off the tee and that sort of stuff. So I knew that wherever I went, I could put that game plan into play and I'd be able to extract, you know, just competitive scores, you know. And then if that just stacks up against whoever you're playing with, you know, every level I'd been at, I'd always been pretty successful. So I figured, well, it's just another step and you just have to, that's where you can get to. So
you mentioned earlier you played with Dustin Johnson in the Australian Open. You couldn't sleep the night before. Who were some of the others, notable golfers that you have played with?
Oh, he's probably the best. I mean, I actually played with Nick Price. We had a tournament out in Fiji and I got paired with him. And that was cool because he was probably, so he was with Norman, like he was number one and he was unreal. He was winning majors and stuff. And he, you know, fiddled and stuffed around over the ball exactly the same as you'd watched on TV. And he still hit the ball good, but he was, you know, he was 50 plus, mid 50s, I reckon, when I played with him. But that was cool. I just picked his brain about just the course and stuff like this. But in terms of, you know, like marquee names and people like that you play with, we just never got the chance playing a lot in Australia. I'd always toil trying to Monday qualify in Corn Ferry as it is now, trying to get in. So you're always playing with those guys that are up and coming. But yeah, I'd never really managed to get myself to a level where you're playing with the marquee guys because they just, a lot of the time, they just never came down to Australia. We were lucky that year because they had the President's Cup that year, 2011. That's why they were all there. Tiger was there, DJ was there. All those guys were down there. It was just by chance. I was in a two ball. I got paired with him. So otherwise, I really hadn't played with that many, but that was an experience for him.
When you think of Adam Scott, what do you think of him?
Oh, he's frustrating to me.
Why?
He's so good. If he could putt, he could win. He could still win now. And I've got friends that know him well and people that have worked with him, you know, technically on his game. And I just look at him and I just think, like, he must have amazing drive to be that competitive and do all the stuff that you have to do now to just to get up and get going. And he's probably 4 or 5 years younger than me, but, you know, like the weight room stuff he has to do, the stretching, the preparation and that. He's obviously, like, he's a pro's pro. But to watch him play, I think he's so gifted long, you know, off the tee with his irons and stuff, but not everybody has everything. And I think he can chip and he can putt, but he can't, it's not a real strength. And if he could just putt just a little bit better, like he could still win majors. So that's what's frustrating for me, because I can see how good he is.
Daniel, what does it mean to you to be inducted into the 2026 Little Rock Athletics Hall of Fame class?
Yeah, it's overwhelming, to be honest. Like I said, I never expected anything. You know, I just wanted to come here and, you know, I was grateful to get a chance to play. I just only ever wanted to play as good as I possibly can. I'm a harsh critic of myself. And I always felt like even with my record, I was like, oh, man, I left a lot out there. I could have, you know, I mean, I won, you know, three or four tournaments. That's great. And I'm finished second a lot. But I always felt like I could have done better. Like that year, I, you know, my last year, I finished 20th. Like I was... wasn't that far off being, you know, probably top 10, but I just had a really poor finish to, you know, I think conference was not great. And then we went to regionals and I really played poor. Like I got completely intimidated by the Stillwater course. Like there's just rough everywhere, big trees everywhere. And I was just like, wow, this is a beast of, it was long too. This was, you know, 25 years ago. And I was like, this is a beast of a course. And I just never adjusted to it. And so it's sort of, for me, it felt like I left a bit on the table, but I didn't even know they had a Hall of Fame. Like I was just, like I said, once the golf finished for me here, I felt, okay, there's that chapter over. And so, yeah, it's definitely extremely humbling, and it's going to be cool to see people I haven't seen for 25 years that I didn't even realise I were coming back into town for it. So it is, it's overwhelming, and it's just exciting. It's just going to be great to see people again.
Best golf course you've ever played?
I've been lucky to play on some nice courses. Because I'm old and I'm bitter, I like courses that reward hitting it straight. Like there's so many courses now where the guys just kill it off the tee and they don't really know how to play. But because they're long, they hit short clubs in and they can shoot good scores without really understanding how I learnt to play the game, and I think how the game really should be, you know, played. But I mean, we were lucky to play the courses here, like Chenal and Pleasant Valley and places like this. Like my home course, in my home state, Lake Caron, that's our premier championship layout. The Kingston Heath's probably the best golf course that I've ever played. Rory said that when he came down to Australia. They played Royal Melbourne, which obviously, you know, they play all the big events there, but Kingston Heath is probably the best layout if you're a bit of a purist for the game, because you have to be on the correct side of the fairway to get at the pins. It's not... like you could be 5 or 6 metres off in the fairway, but you just don't have an angle, so you automatically have to hit it to 30 feet sort of thing. So I like the idea of having to own every shot you hit. You have to be crafty off the tee, and it's not just bomb it down there and then just wedge it in. Like you have to be able to craft it from the tee box. You work your way back. Pin sheet, 4 from the right, I could be on the left, and you work your way back doing that. So Kingston Heath for me is probably the best course in Australia and probably the best one I've played.
Makes you think. Fantasy foursome, living or deceased, you and three others that you could play a round of golf with, who would they be?
Jack would be great to play with, just to watch it. I think I was always a fan of Tom Watson. I don't know why. I think I just like the way he went around. So those two old guys, and I may as well throw Tiger in there, may as well. And I'll just sit there and walk around and just drink some beers and just watch them play. But, yeah, I think they just, like I said, for us, they were so far away from where I was watching golf as a kid. I never really thought about records and stuff, but Jack's record, I think, just stands out. So that him and then Tiger. And I think I just like Tom Watson, the way that he went about it all. I think he had a real grit about him, and I just like that.
Awesome. Daniel, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
No, thank you. Cheers. Thank you.
If hand or wrist pain is getting in the way of your daily life, it's time to see the specialists at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. Their fellowship-trained hand and wrist surgeons treat everything from arthritis and fractures to nerve injuries and carpal tunnel. And with Arkansas's only hand trauma telemedicine program, advanced care is available around the clock. Call Ortho at 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today and get back to living pain-free. That's 501-686-8674. The doctor will see you now.
That will just about do it for this edition of From the Short Grass. I want to thank Daniel Fox for spending some time with me on his trip here to the States. Did you notice that the United States Golf Association has put out their average golfer index? The average male golfer has a handicap of 14. The average female golfer has a handicap of 28.8. Do you know what state leads the way? Arkansas. The average male golfer has a handicap of 10.6. Arkansas comes in second in females. Not bad, Arkansas. Let's see what happens in 2026. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shortgrass.
You have been listening to From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.